I want to praise God for all of you because you are helping me to see and experience God's resurrection. And my hope as we begin this new sermon series about loving one another is that we, as a God's gathered people here at Canaan, will be able to show the world what God's living body is all about today. We are Christ's body, right? And hopefully the body that we represent is a resurrected body. So that means we're not going to just be, you know, lying around and doing nothing, but hopefully alive and joyful and telling the whole world about Jesus and his resurrection and his hope for the new heavens and a new earth and just for new life. So join us today and as we begin this series. So let me start by just saying to you that our sermon series is about getting deeper into 11 spiritual disciplines and our practices that every Christian needs to do in order to grow and to build up, become the church that Jesus longs for. They're based on the mutuality commands that I'm not describing the book. In the New Testament, you know, whenever Paul writes about being, or Jesus talks about loving one another, anything that has a one another command is a mutuality command. So Jesus himself said it in John 13. I should know this by now. Can you read this with me together? The new commandment that Jesus invites his disciples to follow. So let's do that together. A new commandment I give you: love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. So the assumption that we're making here is that by the way we love each other, we are able to tell the world and demonstrate to the world that Jesus' love is real, that Jesus is worthy of being the one that we follow, and we should be his disciple. The assumption that I'm making as well, and next week when Chris preaches, we're all making, is that every Christian is a member of a church. Every Christian is a member of a gathered community of Jesus followers. And every Christian member cares deeply about how his or her church community is becoming Jesus' body in a real way. So in other words, when you come to Canaan, I hope that you care about how our English ministry, how our youth ministry, how our families, how our young adults, how everyone in our church, how we can live together and show the world who Jesus is. And that, I hope, is your primary concern, that Canaan become that place where other people can see Jesus alive and real, not just in our lives, but for the sake of the world. Okay, so that's why we're doing this. We need to learn how to love each other and share Jesus to the world, because that is the best way. So this morning, I want to look at the first mutuality command that Gerald Sitzer mentions in his book, which I hope some of you have purchased. And the command is this: is to welcome one another, based on Romans 15, verse 7. And there are four different translations, so some of you may see it translated differently. So I'll share four of them. For example, in the New International Version, that verse 7 is read, accept one another then just as Christ accepted you in order to bring praise to God. And then in the New Revised Standard Version, which is the version that Gerald Sitzer uses, welcome one another, therefore, just as Christ has welcomed you for the glory of God. And then Eugene Peterson's The Message Version, so reach out and welcome one another to God's glory. Jesus did it, now you do it. Okay. And finally, the English Standard Version, therefore welcome one another as Christ has welcomed you for the glory of God. So this is a very central theme that Paul is addressing here about how God's people should live in fellowship, in community, living in a way that accepts and welcomes each other. It's living in a manner that opens your heart and your lives to people, other people. That's what it means to welcome. Well, I'll go into more definitions about that. So let me get you to, if I can pause a moment, I want you to sort of think to yourself and, I'm not going to ask you to talk to each other because this might be a little too personal and, you might get a little uncomfortable about sharing this. So the question is, when was the last time you were made to feel welcome? Was there an experience in your life where you felt welcome by a community or a group of people? When did it happen? And what did the people do to make you feel like you belonged? What did they do to make you feel like you belonged? Think about it. Did they come out and reach, talk to you and say hello? Did they invite you to have lunch with them after church is over? Did they actually sit down with you and say, okay, I want to know your story, tell me your story? Well, I think we're all familiar with that experience of being made welcome is a great experience, right? Don't you love it when you go someplace where you don't know anyone and someone reaches out to you and says, look, hi, how are you? Let me get to know you. My name is so-and-so, and who are you? And you have a conversation. Well, first of all, if you're alone in a group of strangers, it's great to know that somebody cares about you. Otherwise, you feel very alone, right? So being made welcome is a really important part of what it means to be in the body of Christ. And I hope that all of us who come to this church and maybe every church will feel like there's an opportunity where you're being helped to be made welcome. And you know something? That's not something that happens naturally. No human community welcomes people naturally. So that's why we have to preach about it. That's why we have to teach about it. Because to become a welcoming community requires reflection and maybe a change of practice. It requires looking into, at least for Christians, looking into Scripture and looking at Jesus and how he did it and trying to do the same thing, okay? So that's what we're going to do today. And I was going to say, if you want to interrupt me while I'm talking, that's okay. But I don't know if I have enough time, but we'll see. So let's go with some definitions. Sister talks about this heading, embracing one another with love as a way of defining, welcoming, or accepting each other. In chapter 14 to 15 of Romans, the focus there is about who the Roman people need to learn how to accept better. It focuses on accepting those who are weaker, okay? And in those two chapters, if you recall, Paul was commenting about certain Christians who believed that one could not eat food sacrificed to non-Christian or pagan idols. Do you recall that? All right, so there's a big sort of a controversy within the church. Should we allow, or should we mix with non-Christians who are sacrificing and worshiping at altars that are not Christians, and should we eat the food that's sacrificed there? So according to Paul, those of us who are mature Christians know that the food that's sacrificed to idols has no meaning. It doesn't matter. If you touch it, eat it, it won't make you dirty. It won't make you turn away from God. Whatever you eat that's sacrificed on the idols is counts as nothing, because God sees idols as nothing. So it's okay. A strong believer can participate and eat that kind of food. It's kind of like, should we as Chinese people do certain rituals to honor our ancestors? Okay, and Taiwanese do the same thing. Should we go do the Qingming, right? This is the spring season where we go to graves, to cemeteries, and we sort of pay homage to our ancestors. And because of this controversy, some of the believers, if you go back to Roman times, believe that if you actually participated in food or ate food sacrificed to idols, you are tainting your faith. And Paul considers those Christians immature because they don't quite get it. That for them, whatever you eat will make you unclean. If you participate in an unclean thing, whatever is considered non-Christian, you should not participate in that. So Paul says to those who are mature, maybe for the sake of your weaker brother or sister, embrace them, accept them, don't judge them just because they seem to be very focused on this keeping this practice. All right, so welcoming here means learning to embrace people who don't agree with you, who may be less mature than you, and not putting on this attitude like, I'm superior, I know better than you. All right, so that is hard, is embracing people wherever they are, whether strong or weak, educated or ignorant, right or wrong, saint or sinner. And it conveys this sense, the word greeting conveys a sense of warm embrace, warm acceptance, and genuine interest, going far beyond the superficial hellos. It's a way of saying, I'm glad that you're alive. I'm glad that I know you. I'm glad that you're here and that we're friends. So if we come to church, and I know that not all of us know each other very well, but if we come with that kind of attitude, it would make a big difference, wouldn't it? For yourself, as a person who is welcoming others, you feel better about yourself. But also for those who come and are feeling a little lonely or out of touch. Okay, so the definition is basically about embracing each other. Now, Gerald Sisler then goes on to describe some of the biblical foundations for what it means to welcome another person. And here, he uses two words, initiative and generosity. And I hope that this part doesn't, you just there's some biblical passages I want to share with you in a few minutes. So just hang in there, okay? Because as you read this, it might be a little bit overwhelming. But anyway, I know that this is I hear from other pastors that whenever they're whenever they're doing ministry with young people, especially young people with families with children, one of the biggest complaints about going to a church is that they always say, no one ever welcomes me. I feel like no one ever reaches out to me. No one cares about me, right? And you know, I feel that way too. Every time I go to a church that I'm a stranger to, I feel like no one really cares about me either. Even if there's a very friendly greeter, and we have two of our friendliest greeters right there, it doesn't matter. Because you might come to church and you feel like, oh, well, I'm sitting in the back and nobody's talking to me. All right. So one of the problems is that we have this mindset that we want people to always reach out to us. And that happens for newcomers, but it also happens among us when we come to church. Let's say you're coming back from college and you know, you come to church and everything's changed. All your high school classmates are away in other places and you feel by yourself. And the youth group is still, you know, younger than you, or you don't know anyone in youth group anymore. Well, you don't feel welcome. So what do you do? Well, the attitude to take is that, well, I'm going to complain. I don't feel welcome. I don't want to stay here because no one really cares about me. Well, another attitude to take is an attitude in which Paul, and I think that Jesus too, wants all Christians to embrace. And it's the attitude of taking initiative and being generous. Initiative and generous. Not passive, okay? Because when we are passive towards people, it gives people the wrong impression about us. If we don't take initiative with our relationships, sometimes people might think we're arrogant, right? Or not conditional. In other words, if we go to somebody and we say, I'll be your friend if you be my friend, okay? I'll take you out for lunch, but you have to make sure you take me out for lunch next. Or I'll give you oranges if you give me kumquats. You know, that kind of conditional kind of caring for people is not really conducive to this sense of welcome. Okay, so I'm speaking too quickly, too much, so I just want to make it clear that the best way to overcome this fear of this concern about not feeling welcome is to be a welcoming person yourself, to take the initiative and to be generous. So even if you are coming from, haven't been to Canaan for a while, but you are a member, I hope that you would take that attitude. And even if you are a Christian who goes to a new church, that you also embrace that attitude of taking the initiative and being generous. Okay, so let's see. Here's the foundation for that teaching about initiative and generosity. Jesus gives two negative examples, according to Jared's sister, and he contrasts those negative examples with how Christians who follow Jesus ought to behave. So the first one is this. Jesus looks at the Pharisees and he says, you know, these Pharisees act like here I am people. You know what I mean by that? Here I am. These are folks who expected to be saluted, expected to be admired. All right, and in chapter Luke 11:42, I'll just read this passage to you, and you can look it up on your own later. Jesus says to the Pharisees, "Woe to you Pharisees, because you give God a tenth of your mint, rue, and all other kinds of garden herbs, but you neglect justice and the love of God. So you should have practiced the latter without leaving the former undone." Now the key verse is the next one, verse 43. "Woe to you Pharisees, because you love the most important seats in the synagogue and respectful greetings in the marketplaces." Okay, so there's the example of the here I am personality. The Pharisee would come into a public space and say, okay, you're all supposed to come down and respect me. I'm an important person. Come and greet me and say hello to me, because I'm not going to reach out to you. You're going to come to me, right? You common folks, no, I'm not going to touch you, because you have to come to me. So sometimes if we don't reach out to people, we give people this impression that we're too good to be touched. We're too good to be greeted. We're too good to greet other people. All right. So that's why it's important that we pay very close attention to this behavior that Jesus does not exactly embrace. Because Jesus then says in verse 44 that what happens to people like that, who expect others to always come to them, and they think they're better than other people, is that, woe to you, because you are like unmarked graves, which people walk over without knowing it. So Jesus says that Pharisees are basically people who, in the end, no one's going to remember. Okay. So how does Jesus contrast his disciples? Jesus says that his disciples are meant to be there you are people. Okay. People who behave like Jesus. And how did Jesus behave whenever he went to any social situation? Did he passively wait for someone to come to him? Of course people did. But most of the time, he paid very special attention to the people everywhere who were overlooked. He didn't use his popularity to separate himself from people. Rather, he initiated relationships and acted immediately to welcome other people. All right, so in contrast to the Pharisees who are expecting people to come to them, Jesus says that his disciples reach out to others. All right. Now, I know that some of you might be saying, well, I'm an introvert. Okay, I'll get to you there later. The other people who Jesus speaks of are Gentiles from a negative perspective. He says that Gentiles basically are friendly, but they only stick their own kind. They're only nice to those who are nice to them in return. They follow the rule of strict reciprocity. All right. Jesus is saying that this type of attitude doesn't require real faith or genuine love. So in Matthew chapter 5, verse 43, Jesus says right there as he teaches from the Sermon on the Mount, "You have heard that it was said, 'Love your neighbors and hate your enemy.' But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous." And here's a key verse 46. "If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet," the word greet, "only those, your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even pagans do that? So be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect." So the word pagan here is also translated Gentiles in other versions. So Jesus is saying here that if we just behave like I will care for you, or like you, or reach out to you on the condition that you would treat me the same way, we're no different than Gentiles. But Jesus' followers are supposed to love their enemies. Those who are not, another way of saying that, those who are not part of your little inner circle. Those are your enemies, your natural circle of friends. The foreigner, the newcomer, the oddball, and the enemy. People that you don't usually hang out with. Okay, those are people that we are called to reach out. So therefore, Jesus' followers are supposed to be generous with their givings. Whenever you, and I'm going to skip this passage, but in Luke chapter 14, Jesus talks about throwing parties, but inviting everyone, not just your brothers and sisters or your relatives. Okay, so... And James goes on to say the way to treat the poor no differently than we treat the rich, and so on and so forth. So you get the basic thrust of it, right? That a follower of Jesus Christ is very generous with his or her time and open to embracing new relationships and embracing people. It takes the initiative and is not passively waiting for someone to reach out to him or her. Okay? So, having said that, how do we apply it? And Paul in chapter 16 of Romans has a number of applications which I think as we get to them, you might be able to identify with and maybe embrace yourself. One of the ways that we can welcome people and truly embrace them is to acknowledge them, acknowledging people. The Apostle Paul, if you look at chapter 16 of Romans, if you just look at his letter, the first 16 verses, okay? Do you have your Bible with you? You can just look it up yourself. Chapter 16 of Romans. I purposely didn't want to put it up on the screen because when I put it on the screen, you'd just be amazed at how many names there are. Greet this person, greet that person, greet this person, greet that person. And it goes on and on and on, a whole list of people that Paul either knew personally or knew about. So Paul is making it very clear at the very end of this most important letter that he has ever written that despite all the doctrine and the wonderful teaching that Romans provides, that ultimately is his connection with people that matters. And his connections is not just generic, like what I do whenever I come up and I say, oh, thank you, praise band. That's a generic connection, right? And the reason why I do that is because it does take time to go through everybody's names. But no, Paul's talking about a personal connection. So he devotes almost the entire last chapter to naming people, okay? He acknowledges all the people. Know how he extends greetings to everyone by name. Some people he never met. Now, no matter how small a group may be, sometimes small groups still can't get this right. They still don't know how to acknowledge people and make people feel that like they're important. And sometimes the big mega churches do a much better job of making a person feel like they were the most important person in the world. So the point is, I hope that as we gather as a community, we exhibit a desire to get to know people. To acknowledge people. And this is where introverts can play the biggest and most important role. How many of you identify yourself as an introvert? Okay. Don't be too shy to raise your hand. Okay, I used to be very high introvert, and I eventually moved toward the middle. I think there's some Jungian psychology there, so by midlife I sort of found that middle point. I don't know if you know your psychology, but anyway. So I'm at least more balanced now than I was when I was in my 20s. Betty was much more extroverted when she was in her 20s. But after getting married with me, I beat her down. And no, just kidding. After we got married, after all these years, she also found a balance too, as we got older. So actually, having a balance of both is actually pretty cool. But if you identify yourself as an introvert, acknowledging people is your best strength, is your best gift. Because you know, extroverts, we float around. If you happen to be one, where we get energized by meeting a whole bunch of people. You go to a reception, and an extrovert just wants to talk to as many people as possible, right? And extroverts are great because they sort of bring energy to a room, and every community needs extroverts. But extroverts don't always go deep. They don't necessarily have the sensitivity to help people feel welcomed. Do you see what I'm saying? So this is where you introverts, us introverts come in. We are the ones who need to take the time out to dig deeper. Okay, so when you see somebody around who's sort of not doing much in a church gathering or small groups or anything like that, the introvert, I would say the first assignment is to go and reach the person who seems to be standing by himself or herself and strike up a longer conversation, get to know that person more, acknowledge that person, and get to know that person really well. And I think that if we're able to come to church knowing that we have a balance of extroverted people and introverted people, then our Sunday worship experience will be much better for everyone involved. I know that some of us come to church, including myself, because we want to meet friends. I want to come and say hello to all my brothers and sisters here. I want to figure out to get lunch with them, and especially because one of my agendas is to see if I can help people be healthier with their faith and with their family life. So after Sunday school, I try to spend time over the lunch table, even though I don't always like to eat our Taiwanese lunch. All right, I know some of you are grinning, but you know what I'm talking about. I don't always enjoy the $3 lunch, but I want to be there. I want to sit at a table and find somebody to talk to and be part of that community. So I hope that you come to church on Sundays with that same kind of mindset. It's not just to come, meet friends, and leave, but try to see maybe this is God's way of calling you to becoming a welcoming person. So find somebody or two people or three people, spend time with them, get to know them, and go deeper, and pray with them if you can. So the ministry of acknowledging people really is about making the commitment to meeting with people one-on-one and going deeper. Let me give you one other example. Our praise band is always in need of new instrument players and singers. And we have a great praise band. One of the things I'm really proud about in our church is that we have so many of you who are gifted musically. And instead of just relying on one or two small praise bands like a lot of other churches do, especially a ministry of our size, we spread it out. So we rotate people in, so we have a number of people who can fill in for each other. And that's really great. That means that on one hand, we may not necessarily have the most tight and rocking band, but we do have a good diverse group of people who can be in our praise band. But you know, one of the things our praise band members could do, and this is and maybe you can do with our praise band, is to go out there and acknowledge people. Look for people who might be your replacements. I think we're down to just two bass players, right? How many more bass players do we have? We have Anthony, right, who's really extraordinarily gifted guitarist and bassist. But Vivian plays as well, but Vivian's moving to Southern California, right? So who else is going to play bass? Toby. Oh, Toby's here. So here. Okay. I'm sorry, Christina. Yeah, Toby's the play. Okay. Toby, but she's leaving for college. Oh, yeah. Yeah, see, so I'm not wrong. So you see, maybe one of the things that you could do, or maybe Anthony could do, or one of the praise band members can do, is when you come on Sunday, look out for people who can take your place and prepare them. So acknowledging people has that effect of really expanding our ability to do so much better as a community. Okay, let's move on. Then another thing that Paul talks about is commending accomplishments. And look at chapter 16 of Romans again, and just I'll read it to you, in verse 1 and 2. Look what how does he do this for Phoebe, who is in Taiwan? No, this is a different Phoebe. Not our Phoebe. In Romans 16, 1 and 2, Paul says, I commend to you our sister Phoebe, a deacon of the church in Cenchrea. I ask you to receive her in the Lord in a way worthy of his people and to give her any help she may need from you, for she has been a benefactor of many people, including me. Now, this is called commending Phoebe, commending her accomplishments. I forgot to put the verse up there. Now, commending people is the opposite of gossip. Does that make sense? Like last week we talked about gossip, meaning you talk about people and, you know, assume the worst. But commending people is you talk about people and always talk about the best. And it's like, it's almost like you're going, everywhere you go, you want to connect people and say, I want to recommend this person for a job in your firm. That's commending people, okay? And that's what Paul was doing here, was commending Phoebe to the Romans. And if we approach people with the mindset of wanting to connect people to other people and tell people how wonderful each person is, then that helps to make a very positive impact on welcoming people. It's so important to make positive statements about each other, especially in public, because in doing so, whenever we talk about people, we establish their reputations. Let me give you an example. Just this past week, my sister-in-law and her son came to visit us. They live in New Jersey. They live near Princeton University. And they came out, and we, you know, as some of you may have tried to reach me, but I was unavailable, because for 3 of the 4 days, we were traveling all over the Bay Area, going to all kinds of things. But I don't want. I shouldn't have started that way. I shouldn't have started by saying, "Oh, she came and made us work for her." That's a negative thing to say, right? But that's, unfortunately, that's usually the first thing I think of. Oh man, now I got to take time out to take my relatives to see the Bay Area. Well, no. Let's flip that around. I want to introduce you to Eddie. She is such a wonderful person. Her brother, younger brother, who's in his 40s, recently had a stroke, a very severe stroke, and she spends a lot of time taking care of him, helping his mother, their mom, to find some support, so because he had a very severe condition. But I love her for the fact that she is willing to really work hard to try to help her brother recover to the best of his ability. I want to introduce you to Eddie because even though she could have stayed through today and worshiped with us at our church, she decided to take the red eye home last night because she had to teach Sunday school today at her church. I want to commend to you her because she is a woman of faith, of patience, of love and kindness. And wherever you go, and not to mention her talent, she's an excellent graphic and multimedia designer. And if you meet her, you will be touched by her love, her patience, and her expertise. In fact, when she came out to visit us, she gave Nathaniel and Benji 4 hours of her time to provide coaching so they can to help them think about their next steps in their lives, because she has already taken that journey. So I want to introduce you to Eddie and commend her to you, because she is such a wonderful person. Now, if we did that with everyone, okay, we got to know somebody so that we can start to commend them to other people and start connecting them. You know, there's by the end of that process, the person that you connect with is going to feel very welcome and very cared for. So let's do that. Let's extend our greetings to one another by commending people to each other. Okay, so next one, expressing affections. In chapter 16, verse 16, he ends that whole discussion with, greet one another with a holy kiss. All right, you know where I'm going with this, right? Okay, everyone stand up and kiss each other. No, I'm not going to go there. I mean, maybe in the future, okay? But I remember when I first came to this church and I tried to get us to be more physically, you know, it's a little bit hard because as Asian cultures, we don't like to touch each other, you know, sweaty, icky, germs, viral, whatever. So I got us to at least hold hands when we're doing things together. But I think I've gotten away from that. That's my fault. I'm sorry. But in the future, I hope we do more things where we actually physically touch each other in a way that's non-sexual, okay? In a way that's really affectionate and caring, all right? Let's try to do that. So what Paul is getting into here is that in his day, the Christian community really was very affectionate to each other, and they really longed for each other. They talked with, and you can even see in some of Paul's writings how much he longed for the Philippians, how much he longed for people that were part of the Christian family. And I think back then they actually greeted each other with a holy kiss, what they would call a kiss on the cheek, perhaps, not on the mouth. Okay, I'm going to assume that it's cheek to cheek. Okay, so what can we do to express affection to each other? And wouldn't it be great if people come to our church and they know that people really do care about each other at that level, that they would even be willing to touch each other? right? So it's just an example. How can we translate the holy kiss into a practice for us today, where we can actually demonstrate to people that we do really like each other and love each other and care for each other? I don't have the answer to that, but I think you can probably figure something out. Maybe holding hands helps, but later on we'll work on that, okay? But if you can identify ways, if you happen to be a leader of a small group, or if you are youth ministry, you might want to say, okay, before we close our meeting, let's greet each other with a holy kiss. But we'll translate it to mean this, like hold each other's hands, you know, give each other the slap, the butt slap. I don't know, whatever it might be. Okay, just so that there's some kind of physical way of a gesture of caring for each other. Okay, so I hear someone groaning there. Okay, you don't want to do that. Okay, think of something else then. Be creative. Okay, I know it's hard, but I think that it makes a difference. It helps people feel like we really belong. And finally, conferring a blessing. You know, when my kids were young and we used to take them before they went to bed, we'd always read them a story or make up a story. One of my favorite things I used to do with Nathaniel and Benji while they were sleeping was that it would be called the never-ending story, right? They would give me a word and spell it. And if they spelled it correctly, then I'd say, okay, turn that into an anagram and turn each of the letters in the word into something else. And then we'll try to create a story based on those words. So let's say, if they said city, C-I-T-Y, then we'd say, okay, find some random words that begin with the letter C. Okay, how about college or I? What's a letter, word that begins with I? Isthmus. And T. And then we'd construct a story around that. And by the time we were done with that, everyone would be excited, happy, and then my kids would be challenging us with longer stories, longer words. And at the end of it, we would bless each other by saying, now that the day is over, it's time to go to sleep. May God watch over you and give you good rest. We had a good story. Our life is a good story. Now go to sleep, take God's blessings with you, and may God be with you as you sleep and until we see each other tomorrow, hopefully. Conferring a blessing is really one of the most simplest but solid ways of helping people feel welcome. We may not know how to share the gospel. Some of us don't know the Bible that well. Some of us don't know how to preach the gospel and share the four spiritual laws. But we can bless each other. We can say a word of blessing. I have a friend who actually has a dog, right? And she says that she's involved with a ministry where she takes her dog out to the park and meets other dogs. And she goes to another person's dog and she says, can I pray for your dog? Have you heard of this before? Yeah, okay. So she says, can I pray for your dog? And usually a stranger with a dog will say, what? Because, you know, whenever Betty and I take Mika out, we're basically looking at the dog. It's almost like, you know, parents with kids. The kids are playing. The parents don't interact with each other, but the kids are playing, right? So the dogs are playing or fighting. In my case, Mika's trying to yell at and scream at all the other dogs. But then if I go there and say, can I pray for your dog? It creates an opening for talking about something deeper. But at the same time, I'm basically saying to this family, I want to bless you. I want to give you a piece of God's reality in your life. So I want to bless you so that you can bless others, so that you can know God, so your life can experience fulfillment and joy. That's what it means when you want to when you give someone a blessing. So can we bestow each other here blessings every Sunday and every time we meet? Prayer is okay, but can we actually do something? Okay, so we have the holy kiss each other, and then bless each other. All right, so I can imagine a small group meeting where the first thing we do is acknowledge each other, we get together, we say hello, we remember everyone's name, and share our stories, and then we commend each other, we start to brag about each other, and then we kiss each other, and then we bless each other. By the time you're done with that evening, who needs to go to watch a ball game? Right? That's so much better. Who needs to be entertained by Broadway? That's so much better. It's more interactive. So I think Paul has it right. If we are to really, truly love each other, these practices can really help. So can we do that? Well, let me summarize. So the first thing is that the definition of welcoming one another is to embrace people where they are, whether strong or weak, educated or ignorant, accepting each other, showing genuine interest with one another, going beyond the superficial hello. Secondly, the biblical foundation for greeting one another and welcoming each other is through taking initiative and being generous with ourselves, with other people. Okay, unlike Pharisees or Gentiles, we take the initiative and we welcome everyone, no favoritism, and we care for everyone. And then based on Romans 16, Sistler identifies four practices. One is to acknowledge people, knowing their names, knowing who they are, commending accomplishments, recognizing and talking about how wonderful people are so that we can build up a positive sense of who we are, expressing affection, and conferring a blessing. If you get the book, you can read this in detail. But for now, I think this is pretty wise, don't you? John Merrick was a man transformed by somebody who welcomed him. In the opening story of this chapter, this man, who grew up with his many physical abnormalities, and you can see his face, he was all disfigured. Very hard for a person with that condition to experience love in life. As he got older, he was a very gentle and very genuine, caring person, but over time, it wears on you if you're looked at as a person who is abnormal or strange or weird. And he had to hold all that in and try to be kind to people and understanding, until the author of this story, not the author, not Gerald's sister, but another person, introduced him to a young lady. And when that young lady didn't even judge him at all and just welcomed him and embraced him and loved him and treated him like a normal person, he broke down and cried, because this was the first time that the Elephant Man had ever been treated with such welcome and love. And that's transformative. So believe me, when you and I can get over our worry about how we're treated and take the initiative to reach out to other people and be generous with our time and loving and doing all these practices, lives will be transformed. People will see hope. They will have the courage to live each day as if each day is worth living. And if that can happen, brothers and sisters, you have fulfilled the Great Commission, or at least started to fulfill it. I invite you to pray with me as we think about how we can be more welcoming to others. And in the praise band, please come on up and help us close today. God, so many of us have felt the pain of rejection, a loneliness, and sometimes we have found healing by being part of the Christian church communities. Other times we have found healing in just having a personal encounter with you. But whatever the case is, help us so that even as we have been blessed and healed by you, help us now to think about how we can be a blessing to others, how we can reach out and welcome people, make them feel like they're loved, embraced, and cared for. May that be our commitment today as we strive to be more faithful to you. In Jesus' name.